friends, to the Bob and Brad podcast. My name is Mike Keenitz, and today I'm interviewing Sandy Hilton, who is a physical therapist and author of the book Self-Care for Pelvic Pain. She is also a PT and part owner of Entrio.Physiotherapy, which works with people online, and she commonly works with people who are having pelvic pain and sometimes urinary incontinence. Today we are talking about Self-Care for Pelvic Pain, her new book, as well as her sit kit, which is helps with sensory integration, which is a technique she has been working on. So without further ado, here is Sandy. All right. Thank you, Sandy, for joining us today.
Always happy to be here. This is great.
So today we are going to be talking about pelvic floor pain, and you have a book, and we'll be talking about that later. Do you maybe want to mention your book quick?
It's called Self-Care for Pelvic Pain. It's a self-treatment book. The idea is there's so much we need to do to take care of ourselves so we can function from day to day and not have to wait for that PT appointment to feel better. It's really designed to give people some autonomy and some control over their pain.
Yeah, it's written for the layperson, so it's a lot easier to understand than you would think. It's not like a textbook we had in school.
Not at all a textbook.
No. All right. Would you mind giving us your backstory?
Sure. I'd love to. I graduated from PT school in 1988. I just got the invitation to my 35th year.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Our PT reunion that's going to be this summer. So I don't even have to count how many years that is. I got it in the mail. It's been a fun career. I started in neuro with working with people that had had strokes and head injuries and spinal cord injuries, and then went from that to pediatric neurological disorders and wheelchair seating system designs, and went from that to outpatient orthopedics. And that's when I started doing pelvic health. But I was married to an army guy. He's like, why do you keep switching your focus? And it's like, because I kept moving around the country and the world. And a lot of it is what jobs are available at the time. But What that's done is given me a lot of different perspectives and been able to work with really great therapists and physicians around the country over the years, and occupational therapists and speech therapists. And you get that whole breadth of what rehab can be. And a lot of what's in the book with sensory integration is actually an occupational therapy technique for working with children that have developmental sensory disabilities. So it's, right. It's not terribly familiar in the physical therapy world, but it is very familiar for occupational therapists.
Yeah, I was reading a little bit of that. I noticed you mentioned that. I imagine constantly moving and having different positions keeps therapy interesting for you.
You never get bored.
Yeah.
It's always fun. There's so many ways we can help people. And I think that moving over the years and changing focus and seeing the flavors in different parts of the country, people are like, oh, we do this here and this is what works best, and that other stuff's not very great. And then you move 6 hours away and they do exactly something else, and everyone's getting a little bit better. So it's a really nice, and not tied to any one particular technique because of that, because I've seen so many things help people.
Sure.
And I've seen so many things not help people. Which is why we still, despite years and years of working really hard with things like back pain and pelvic pain, there's still people that have persisting chronic pain. We haven't cracked the magic code for this yet.
Yeah. So you just moved. You were talking to me earlier before the podcast, but people can still find you through your website before. Do you want to mention that?
Right. So Entropy Physiotherapy and Wellness, Sarah Haig, who has been on here before, wrote her fabulous incontinence book. Her and I still own Entropy Physiotherapy. It was a brick and mortar place in Chicago until the middle of March. And it's now virtual. So we're still doing telehealth consultations, mentoring, all of those still exist, but our physical practice will be in different places. I will physically be practicing in Oregon, and Sarah is physically practicing in Illinois up at Rosalind Franklin University.
So do you both work on similar patients, or do you get more pelvic pain and she gets more urinary incontinence?
We both work on similar patients. I am a pain geek. I like working with incontinence because it's so distressing to people, and it's solvable. It's lovely to be able to help people solve a problem that's stopping them from engaging in the things they love. Pain is not often that easy. Not that incontinence is easy, but it can be more. We know more about helping incontinence. We have level one evidence for incontinence. We don't have that for pain. But we do both. Sarah's just phenomenal with the post-prostatectomy and problems with pregnancy. That's something she really shines at. And I love pain. That sounds weird.
You like helping pain.
I like making pain go away.
Yeah, there you go.
Getting it under control. Yeah.
So your website is entropy.physio, right?
Entropy.physio.
Okay.
So entropy, like the third law of thermodynamics, that things sort of fall apart over time and you need to put some energy in the system to get them back working well.
Creative.
Yeah.
So today we're going to discuss pelvic pain. Can you define what pelvic pain is?
Yes. We've done some research. Meryl Alipadu, Mark Bishop, and I wrote and published a paper a couple of years ago now about how the consistency of how we treat pelvic pain and even how we define it is really still all over the map. Pain societies around the world are still trying to pin this down. So that was my hesitation. It's like, well, of course I can. And this is not anything that has been solved, but we have a working definition, which is essentially anything from your belly button to your knees, mid-thigh area, front, back. So it includes the bony pelvis. The nerves that feed the pelvis come from your all the way up in T12, so above the lumbar spine, all the lumbar nerves, all the sacral nerves are all components of what's happening in the pelvis for motor and sensory control. So we get to claim the back, the belly, the bony pelvis, and all of the muscles.
So essentially the core.
Yes, because we do talk a lot about breathing. So even the diaphragmatic work can impact the tone in the pelvic floor. Really the human, because our thoughts and beliefs and expectations are a huge part of it. It is normal for the pelvic muscles, if a loud noise happened, our pelvic floor should lift and tighten. They're supposed to. So that's normal. They're also normal, supposed to stop when it's no longer a problem. So it's reactive, it's reflexive, and it's always working. It's just also supposed to stop working. And most of the problems we see in pelvic pain is where those reflexive responses that are normal get overenthusiastic and stop, don't stop. They just keep being like this. And that makes it very hard to sit down, to pee, to poop, and to have pleasurable sex or intimacy of any kind. Because as one of my friends in England said, if your knackers hurt, wouldn't be wanting to use them. So yes, whatever that means. It's pretty common. It's a region of the body. Different people will describe it differently, but there is not one agreed upon. And that's a really important word there. There's not one agreed upon definition for what is and is not pelvic pain because so many components are in part of it. To make it more restricted in the area, it's the basically what a friend of mine and I call your butt print. You know, when you stand in sand or on wet, your feet are wet and you stand on pavement and you leave a footprint. When we sit, we leave a butt print. That is part of it as well. All of the things around your nether regions. The other countries have such great name, like your undercarriage. the naming of things through our genitals and our bottoms is amazing. But those parts between where the urethra, where your pee comes out, the anus, where your poop comes out, vaginal areas, vulvas and perineal bodies and all of those parts that people tend not to talk about and often use the wrong words. Like it's something we don't want to say. So instead of saying penis, people will come up with all kinds of different names for it. And that makes getting care for the part that hurts challenging. Female anatomy is even worse for being accurately named. And then you're trying to get care for a part where the only names you've heard for it aren't actually structures. And it can make it very frustrating and misleading and hard to get proper care. So the proper naming of things is helpful. But what makes pelvic pain different from, say, back pain is there don't tend to be people not wanting that information spoken about in public and banning books on it and saying that can only be taught by these people over here and you can't talk about it in public. It makes it really hard to have your body operate properly and have good operational knowledge about how am I supposed to work and how would I know if it's not working and who do I ask for help if it's not right? Those things all require that we know what our bodies do. So this is, the book doesn't really go into much of that. It assumes a little bit of knowledge. I sneak some in there, but it's an important thing. We should know, like we should know how our hands work and what fingers are. We should know what all our little bits and pieces are and how they work.
Right. Yeah. No, it's a good book. I mean, you describe everything and there's like, there's visual illustrations. So you
there are visual illustrations.
For the people that like those.
I had a fabulous editor, and Amy, the editor, and she was very patient with my desire to have more graphic descriptions and pictures than are in there, and they said no.
It's very animated, cartoonish.
It's very animated.
But yeah, it shows, you can get the gist of where to do it for the sensory training techniques and the nerve innervations, so.
Because you don't have to be an anatomist to know how to help yourself feel better. Like if your hand hurts, you rub it. You don't have to think, oh, I'm rubbing my proximal interphalangeal joint in the medial caudal direction. You just rub it and it feels better. Mm-hmm. That's good. That's fine.
So from your experience, how common is pelvic pain?
Well, I'm biased because that's what I see.
I suppose.
Wow, it's everywhere. That's not true. In women, it's roughly 14 to 25%, 32%. I have the stats in front of me. So 14 to 32% of women in childbearing age will have some sort of pelvic pain. So vaginal, urethral, or rectal pain, or in non-medical language, it hurts when you pee or poop or sit or try and have sex or touch it, like to wipe, or wearing clothes. And then in men, because men have pelvic pain too, I think it's underreported because the stats say 10 to 15%, but my caseload tends to run about half and half of at any given time of men with pelvic pain and women with pelvic pain.
Is there any time where people think they have back pain, but it's really pelvic pain?
Yes. And sometimes they have pelvic pain and it's really back pain.
Oh,
because sure. It's a shared neural intervention. The best, and I think the most important thing with pain, regardless of where you feel it, is if you're doing something to help it get better and it's not getting better, try something else. Maybe just a different part of the body, like because nerves start somewhere and go somewhere. And if you're working at the back and it's not getting better, try the other end. Or if you're working at this end and it's not getting better, try up at the spine. There's constant chatter and communication, and it gives us a lot of opportunities to help.
Sure.
Which is good.
So what are some pelvic conditions that you see and what specialists might want people to see?
What specialists I would want people to see to help them?
Yeah, sorry. I kind of wasn't that funny.
So I feel like I should come with this big disclaimer. Moving, slightly sleep deprived. This is where we get into the naming of things and some of the mismatches in the literature. But most common in men is rectal pain. The sensation of a golf ball in the rectum is one of the most common for that area, and that can be women or men, anyone with a rectum, that would make it challenging to sit. And if you're you can't go through life not being able to sit. Sitting should be a relaxing, comfortable thing where you take the weight off and recharge and get ready for the next day, or enjoy a movie, or play with your kids, or eat. So if you're not able to sit comfortably because you have pain in that area, that you should be seeing someone. First off, I'm again biased, I'm a physical therapist. If sitting is uncomfortable and you're not bleeding or sudden loss of continence, then a physical therapist is a great place to start, because it could just be a muscle spasm. And one very particular muscle that if it doesn't relax, you can't, the stool can't come out, and that creates constipation and all sorts of other problems. But there's nothing wrong with your gut. It's that the hose is being squeezed and things can't come out. That's a muscle spasm. If we get rid of the muscle spasm, things go back to work normally. So yes, pelvic PT for that, for sure. Problems having bowel movements, problem passing stool, problems keeping stool in, because if it's not working, that's another problem. And that's fecal incontinence is one of the things that will stop people from doing everything. And it needs to be treated. It needs to be treated fast. People need to get to help. So a proctologist or physical therapist, pelvic health therapists all over the world are really good at saying, you know, this is beyond my skill here, I'm going to refer you to this good person. So it's not like we're going to keep you churning in something that's not helping you. If there's some anatomical or physiological problem that needs a physician to care for, we will refer on. I love it when people have seen their doctor and been screened for things like cancer, because there's nothing I can do that's going to prevent that. And there are people who can help that, and you need to go to them. But at the same time, I can help you not hurt and not be incontinent and go about your daily life with some joy. So that's kind of going from back to front. The problem sitting, problems having a bowel movement, vaginal pain, which is inside, or labial pain or vulvar pain, which is outside. So you can have a deep pressure, not the golf ball in a rectum, more like this big heavy pressure in the center through the perineum and vagina. That can be prolapse, but it also can be muscle spasm. I describe it to women that are having problems with penetrative sex or just pain. It's like, you know, when you're driving and there's in parking lots, there are those things that come up out of the ground and block the road. Yeah. There's a name for them and I can't remember what it is. Just like there's a muscle around the rectum that if it's in spasm, nothing can come out. There's a loop of that in around the vagina, and if it's in spasm, nothing can go in, and it hurts, which makes sense, because if there's a muscle spasm, it's going to hurt to try and touch it or use it. So a lot of what we do in pelvic health, especially in pain, is teaching people how to relax those muscles and keep them relaxed. As I said earlier, they're reflexive and reactive, which is great, but they're also supposed to stop. It's fine that they contract. It's just not fine if it doesn't remember how to stop contracting.
So is your treatment for that the sensory integration stuff that you teach in your book?
It can start with that. Sensory integration is a great way to start when just touching hurts, or when just thinking about being touched hurts, because it literally integrates your sensory system to get it accurate again. One of the big things with pain is that pain is normal. It's normal to hurt. Not fun, but it's also normal that it goes away. It's when pain persists, and that's usually when we're coming involved. I'd like to be involved within the first 3 months of symptoms, not 10 years later. Because if we could help people right away, like, wow, you know, I did this thing and now it hurts to sit, or I can't wipe without pain, or it's getting really hard to have a bowel movement, or sex is starting to hurt, and you get help soon, we could maybe stop people from having to hurt for 10 years before they get help. That would be fabulous. Moving forward, there's also a loop around the urethra and sometimes some continence problems. Isn't the bladder, it's that the pelvic muscles are either not contracting when they should, or they forget how to stop. It's a lot of coordination, just like you would see in sports problems of trying to coordinate your pitch or anything like that. The timing of the muscle and the ability of a muscle to relax is important. Same with these muscles.
How do you distinguish what's causing the problem?
Trial and error. And there's not a lot of real estate in the area. It's about the size of your hand. Not my hand, your hand. our bodies have matches. So we check the muscles. That's the levator group is the one I'm talking about, with those little loops. That assessment to find out if it's tight or not is less than 5 minutes. It's not terribly complex. But if it hurts to even touch, you can't find out if the muscle's in spasm because you're already, all you know is it hurts. That's where the sensory integration comes in, where we're like, well, let's restore normal touch tolerance, normal pressure tolerance in a way that is not torturous, that doesn't create a muscle spasm. So we're trying to sneak positive, pleasurable sensory input into an area so it stops guarding. And that's the sensory integration part, where it is not supposed to be brutal. You're not supposed to hate it. You're not supposed to hold your breath and just endure it. It should actually feel good or less bad or maybe just boring, but not horrible. Right. I tell my patients that pleasure's on the other side of boring. It's like, because peeing, pooping, and sex are all supposed to feel good. Like if your bladder's full and you get to go pee, it feels fabulous to have that pressure gone. That's normal. It's a positive reinforcement. Same with a good bowel movement. Same with good intimacy and sex. They're all supposed to feel good. There's a loss when it doesn't. Beyond just the pain, there's that loss of normal reward. But when someone's hurting really bad, talking about pleasurable stuff is really distance away. So I was like, we're going to go for boring. We're like, how was that? Meh.
Well, boring's normal then. And then you get into
pleasure's normal.
Well, yes, normal. I should say you boring's, get back to boring, zero.
Boring's a nice neutral.
You're improving at least.
Pleasure is normal. I mean, think about food. Food should be good. Not just, it is all right.
Yeah, I mean, there's dopamine signals.
I think of MREs. My ex and my kids were Army, and I think of MREs when I think of that. It's like, yeah, they'll keep you alive. No one likes them.
Dehydrated food.
Mm-hmm. I mean, they will keep you alive, but is that all that you want? No.
Sure.
So, yeah.
It's a good correlation for people to understand. We're going to start talking a little more about your book, which we talked about earlier, which is Self-Care for Pelvic Pain. And you also have a sit kit. So when you order these separate, or do they come together?
So OPTP, the outpatient therapy products that published it, you can buy it as a set. Mm-hmm. You can also buy the book separately. Okay. My intention of doing it was that you're not getting the balls that are in the book are like a collection of years of trial and error and testing and classes with therapists and in the patients or the clinic with patients of what's kind of a nice sample. But you'll find a preference. And the whole thing about sensory integration is finding what feels good to you. So if I like to sit on, there's one in the bag that's like this inch, maybe kind of squishy, but not too squishy blue ball. That's the little green one. The people in France liked the little green one. That was really interesting.
Really?
Like, that's the French pelvic ball.
This is very firm, by the way.
It is very firm. It's like a marble.
Bouncy, yeah, it's like a bouncy ball.
Uh-huh. Don't let it loose by a dog. I had a lab growing up that ate everything bad. The little blue one it fits inside that sit bone. So you can get right on the muscle attachments around the bones of the pelvis. And it's supposed to feel good, just like if you did that behind your shoulder or on your foot. Mm-hmm. It's that sense of, oh, yeah, that feels good. That's what we're looking for. But every body is going to have a different preference. and your preference changes over time. I explain that to patients like shoes. There are days when you just don't want to wear those shoes. They don't feel good that day. It doesn't mean anything. There's no deep physiological construct that supports why you would like one shoe on one day and one on another. It's just your preference that day. And the balls are like that. I wanted to call it the bag of balls, but
I suppose they didn't want to. For
Amy, the editor, has more class than I do.
I guess. Yeah, they all come in different shapes, sizes, and
textures,
firmness.
Firmness.
So this is solid, but it's spiky. This is firm. This is squishy.
Yeah, and the weird thing about the spiky ones is you'd think, wow, that's a lot. But sometimes that just feels really good. It's like Goldilocks. That's too hard. That's too soft. That's too big. I hate that color. It's a sensory experience. So whatever you like best is what you should use.
Right. And it's going to depend upon your size as a person too.
Your size as a, and your preference. Like I said, the French, I teach in France every once in a while, and the therapists in the classes, every time I've gone over, have preferred the little green one, because I pass all the balls around and I say, which ones do you guys like? And it was, and I don't, like people come in all different sizes in France too. But I don't know. I haven't figured out any reason for it, and I don't really think there is one.
So the sensory integration is supposed to give your painful area a different sensation to think about. Is that the theory behind it?
Yes. You're essentially practicing pleasurable, normal sensation. So if something is hypersensitive, we want to bring it back to normal. If it's too sensitive, we want to calm that down. If you've practiced for survival to not pay attention to any input from that area, so you work really hard to not feel it, to not pay attention to it, that's not helpful in the long run. So we want to bring it up to a nice mid-range. So if you tend to ignore the area because it's been painful and horrible, we want to give you positive sensations so that you can think about it, feel it, own it again. And if it hurts when the wind changes direction, or you look at a chair, these are all not jokes. You look at a chair, you think about sitting, you think about driving to work, and that makes your pelvis hurt. That is very real. And that's a hypersensitive system. This is a way to start bringing that back to normal so that you have a workable environment to then change any muscle spasms. And because just going straight for the muscle spasm when all of the sensory nerves are freaking out is torture, in my opinion. It's just mean. And we don't have to be. We can say, here, I'm going to give you this ownership of how to make stuff feel good. And then we can work on those muscle spasms.
Sure.
That often go away if they're not reactive anymore.
Yeah. If you have like a different sensory input, because I mean, with patients, I didn't work in pelvic floor therapy, but you know, you're working with a total knee and it hurts. A lot of times you just kind of rub the outside of the knee gently, and they're like, oh, and then like while they're doing stuff, and it's a different input.
It's not scary anymore.
No.
Right? That's why we have questionable senses of humor in therapy, and we keep people a little distracted and kind of laughing and make them feel a little good, and you get that movement back. And same thing. It's exactly the same.
So then you have different, one of them, because this one was for the stomach, correct?
We just kind of were like, because I have there's a gentleman I worked with that's what he sat on. He put it lengthwise and sat on it like a little miniature foam roller.
Sure.
And he sat on it that way. And that was it. That would get rid of the muscle spasms and make things feel normal.
Huh. That's kind of interesting.
That's my response in the clinic. Huh. Okay.
Just a simple get some pressure in an area and roll on it to relax it.
Wow. And make it relax it. And how cool if it's something that you have. And I wish I'd brought it over here because I'm living in two different places. But when my younger son was in basic training, you can't take stuff with you. But he grew up with me as a mom. And he took a rock, wrapped it in two pairs of army socks and a bunch of 100-mile-an-hour tape. So it looks like a wad of green tape. Has a solid core and it's a little squishy. And he used that on his shoulders and his back and his legs when he hurt through basic training. If you put a little pressure into it and you get it to relax, it feels better.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't Sorry, OPTP, you don't have to buy them.
Yeah.
But it's really convenient. Not everyone wants to make their own stuff. So it's nice to have a variety pack to say, I like this. This feels good. This helps me.
Yeah, it's good to try at home. And if something works and you want to purchase it, then this kit is there for that reason.
Yeah, and especially like in therapy clinics. So if you have them to try, then the people can just buy the balls they like. They don't have to get all of it. And those are all on purpose. I did this all on purpose. OPTP carries all of those. So if you try one and you like it, you don't have to, sorry, OPTP, get the whole bag. you can get the one you like. And so it's a sample pack. Or if you like, you know, yeah, I'm going to get them all. And it's cheaper to get the bag than to buy the sets of all of the components. And then you have them. The bigger balls work well on larger areas. The little green balls, great between your ribs too.
Here's a size comparison if you're watching.
Yeah, right. It's like we're talking planets. I wish I knew my planets well enough to give that example.
Pluto's small, isn't it, if it's a planet anymore?
So rude to Pluto. Yeah, so it's they're it's an exploratory thing, which is what sensory integration is all about. It's a way to explore sensation with different textures and pressures to get the normal pleasurable sensation back. So you start with something that's disrupted and you bring it back to normal. And then you load it and use it and do those things that bring back normal function.
So it can be used with many types of pelvic pain, right?
All of them, just pain. So if we think of pelvic pain as pain in the region, yes, they're sized that way so they fit around the anatomy. No matter what anatomy you have, they're sized to fit around the bony edges and so that nothing gets pinched. I do not have the parts, but I imagine if you're sitting on a ball and it squeezes a testicle, that's probably not helpful. There's no therapeutic benefit to that.
No, probably not.
So it's important that they be a size and a texture and a density that is going to help, but not torture, but large enough and intense enough to actually feel it. So it's the same as we talk about strength and conditioning for anything, enough to make a difference, not so much that it's anti-helpful.
Sure, problematic. So you, in the book, you mentioned like you can try them. You kind of have certain balls in certain positions for certain ailments, but you can kind of mix and match. Whatever works.
Yeah, absolutely. The only rule, and I think it's in there often, the only rule is that it's supposed to feel good. Like if you're doing it and you're like, I hate this, please stop. There is no need or benefit to practicing doing something you hate when we're trying to get sensation to be pleasant. It is faster. If you're just like, I want it faster, great. Then aim for the stuff that feels good. It's like you have your own little compass. Does this feel good? Yes, do that. Do that 6 or 7 times a day for 2 to 3 minutes at a time on purpose. And notice and be aware of the pleasurable sensation or the boring sensation if it's pain. And some people, I mean, pain is hard and it's brutal to experience. And sometimes for some people, the concept of no pain is a cruel, teasing kind of thing to say because they hurt so much so often. If that's where you are, then what we're aiming for is less bad, just even a hair less bad. And we'll aim for that and build that. It's like I'm back in Oregon. I can talk about building fires on the beach again. It's you get that little tiny ember and you just protect it and help it grow. That's what trying to build the pleasure and normalcy back into sensations about.
So would sitting put the most amount of pressure on the area versus laying down on your back versus like on a wall?
Depends on which area we're talking about.
I suppose, yeah.
So on, let's say in between the sit bones, the little bones in your butt, sitting is going to be the most pressure. Laying down with the ball like against the wall or the edge of a sofa will be less pressure. Same way you would think about your foot. Standing's the most pressure. Sitting is less. Laying down with your foot on the wall is less. Having someone else rub it is less. So you have a, you always have a, can't think of the word, a little gradation of how you can manage pressure. But so it's some, it's so weird though, because you're like, hey, my left side loves this, my right side hates it. Okay, body's so weird.
Yeah. If so, do you have people like start laying down then, or do you just do whatever they feel comfortable with?
Typically, well, because in the clinic, it's some of, let's say, someone with pelvic pain where the where sitting hurts really bad. I will not start with them sitting because we already know that hurts really bad. I'm curious about what doesn't hurt. So I'm on a hunt for less bad, pleasurable. What are all the things that are okay? And I just believe people when they say this hurts, this hurts, this hurts. When I do that, that hurts. It's like, okay, I'm not going to prove it. I trust you. And what we're going to do instead is try and find all the things that don't hurt or hurt less. And then you're going to practice those and we'll see how that affects the things that were hurting more. So often with pelvic pain, where sitting and touch anywhere through the perineum is impossible, we start as close to the area as you can. So someone might start standing with that larger ball or one of the spiky ones along the spinal muscles where the nerves that feed the pelvic floor come from. So rather than going to these areas that can't be touched, we go higher up and start there. Same string, different end, and kind of sneak your way to the area. There's always, yes, there is always an area. I mean, it's either everything hurts and then you start with what's the least bad, or there's an area that hurts and we just find the edges and then sneak the edges smaller and smaller so that everything can be touched, and then increase the pressure of that touch and then increase the shearing forces through it. And then you're in a place where you can do more standard musculoskeletal work because the sensory nervous system isn't protecting it so far away. It doesn't, I would love to say it doesn't take very long. In some people, it doesn't take very long at all. In other people, it takes a long time. And that's that goes into the bucket of pain is weird. We don't fully understand it and all the components. We just are constantly trying to figure out how to do this more gracefully, more elegantly, more quickly, and more where people are in charge of it themselves.
Sure. Is there anything, is there like a common denominator you see with a lot of your patients? What started it? I suppose it just varies.
I wish. Because if we knew that, we could get ahead of it. Yeah. So in women, sometimes it starts with period pain. I'm figuring out how to say this politely. Up until, I think it's Queen Elizabeth, the women were considered supposed to hurt when they were in pregnancy in their periods, and trying to alleviate that pain was going against the will of the creator. So there was a lot of female pelvic pain that was seen as, not only is there nothing to do for it, but it's actually horrible to try. Thankfully, culture has changed.
Yeah.
Sometimes. But there was just a thing where somebody said they're not supposed to talk about periods in school. So it would be lovely if everyone who starts to have their period realizes, wow, I'm cramping. But here's some things I can do to not hurt as much. Because then once a month for 40 years, they're not having intense pain, which sensitizes your nervous system. So what if we got ahead of that and said, wait, here's some things you can do when you start to have your period to not suffer as much. Suffering is not necessary. You don't get bonus points on the musculoskeletal sensory scorecard for tolerating discomfort and pain. Especially when there's things you can do to turn it down that you can do yourself. No medications, no doctor's visits. It's you own this. That could be helpful. If you get a cramp in your ass, like you get a cramp in your foot, you stand on it. You get a cramp in your ass, put some pressure through it. See if you can inhibit it right then. Because what we do not do with foot cramps is lie down, put your foot on the back of the sofa and wait for it to go away. You stand on it, mm-hmm. and you put pressure through it right then, that kind of thing. But then, so those are more musculoskeletal kind of causes, but there can be infections. There, like a UTI can can agitate the system and they can get into spasm and just forget to stop. So it was an infection that started the cascade, and the infection can be gone, but the cascade remains. We have to go clean that up, essentially.
Sure. I guess it's very individualistic, I'm realizing after talking with you.
Right. And pain is weird. But so muscles can get crampy. Vascular systems can get a little dysfunctional, either too much or not enough. Sensory systems can get dysfunctional, either too much or not enough. Spines can get bothered, and that can bother everything downstream. The pelvis is part of the downstream area. Because why not? If your gut is bothered, it can make the pelvic floor go into spasm. Like, that's going to help. But it can. And then you can, you have a stomach flu, your pelvic floor cramps up. Your stomach flu goes away, but your pelvic floor stays cramped. That's not helpful. And it's really painful. Those kind of things can be what happens. Childbirth, falls, all of it. It's just amazing. One of my friends said once, it's amazing we get up in the morning and are okay.
I suppose, yeah. You get some injuries or...
Yeah, but then we recover. So the problem really is when we don't.
Yeah, if you don't recoup all the way. Yeah. So the important thing you're saying is get it checked out much sooner than later if it's not going away.
Sooner than later. And really an emphasis on what can I do to help myself? Because we know, like athletes, I just look at professional athletes training programs as what us mere mortals should have too. They spend hours a day recovering to be able to return to play. Rest of us tend to do our exercises once or twice a week and wonder why it's not getting better faster. It's well, their job is to have these great training programs they're doing once or twice a day. They have manual therapy. They've got some hot and cold, there's this whole barrage of things to help their system reorganize. What we can do with sensory integration work is practice that 2 to 3 minutes, 6 to 7 times a day, do something that just feels good on purpose to calm your nervous system down in a productive, helpful, practicing pleasure kind of way. It can be anything. It's a great habit to get into of get your tea and smell it and enjoy the smell of it. That is a sensory input of just taking that second to be I like the way this smells. This smells really good. It does really good chemical things inside of us for calming inflammation and boosting dopamine and serotonin and all those things that help our neuroimmune system work better. And those are things we own. We don't need to go to someone to get it. We can do it ourselves.
Sure. So my last question I have on here is, in the last chapter of your book, you provide some simple tips for pelvic patients to feel good each day. Would you mind describing a few of them?
That was one of them.
Okay. That's tip one.
2 to 3 minutes, 6 to 7 times a day, something that purposely feels good. The other thing that I love to recommend to patients, once we get them to a point where they can, and it might be protective, I don't know. A protective thing is something that if we do it on a regular basis, it limits or minimizes the chance of something going wrong. And that would be to purposefully sit on a bunch of different surfaces. Like sit on that hard chair and be like, yeah, it's not my favorite, but I can do this. And then sit on the comfy sofa that you love the best and just mix it up. Cross training for your pelvic muscles. Maybe.
I suppose just getting a variety, of different.
Getting variety, right? And to challenge those, I'm only okay under these very narrow conditions, because that's not actually okay. It might be a point where you need to, and with someone, again, with all respect for the difficulty and the challenge people go through, that might be that, that could be life-saving. If I could be okay under the specific set of conditions, I don't want to demean or diminish that, but I also would love to have people be able to move beyond that to have a bigger buffet of possibilities. But for some people who are in horrible pain, what I just said would sound really fabulous. So I don't want to minimize that.
All right. Do you have anything else you would like to add?
Well, the doing the pleasure is the biggest. I think if you're like, I want to remember one thing to do, it would be do something that's fun and pleasurable every day on purpose.
Sure. Just get out of the pain habit.
Get into the pleasure habit. the words are different and they're on purpose. It's like, no, purposefully pursue pleasure. It sounds so hedonistic, but really it's not. It's normal. And if you look at any other species on the planet, that's what they do. Watch a cat. They're really good at purposefully pursuing pleasure. And mice. But, you know.
Yeah. I was thinking of koala bears for some reason.
I have not spent much time around them. I don't know.
Well, I've never been around them in person, but they're always just relaxing.
They seem content.
Yeah, they just kind of eat eucalyptus leaves, which make them alter their consciousness and just lay around all day, basically.
Just chill.
Yeah.
Koala chill. Yeah, and do things that are fun. Put something fun in your life. I know life is hard, and I'm living it right now. There's a lot of work to do, but I'm not going to get struck by the lightning bolt of hypocrisy on this one because, yes, still purposely doing something that is pleasurable every day. You know, the basics, stay flexible. If we get tight and spasmy, we are tight and spasmy, and our nerves get squished by that. So doing your yoga routine, if you love yoga, when you first wake up in the morning, move before you jump up and start working. Get some flexibility and warm your system up. Be kind to yourself because it's doing a lot of work for you.
Sure. Well, I don't have any other questions, so thank you for joining me today. People can find you at entropy.physio, and mm-hmm. your book is available on Amazon and
Amazon?
OPTP?
Yep, Amazon and OPTP.
Okay.
You can email me directly at sandy@entropy.physio. And I sort of still live on Twitter for as long as Twitter still lives.
Do you work with, so your patients, I suppose, have to be in Oregon now to work with insurance, but otherwise you can see them online?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Okay. So online would be consulting or telehealth, but the telehealth would be based on how quickly I get, so Illinois, because I'm keeping that license, and how quickly I get the compact here in Oregon set up, because I'll have access to all those states once I do the paperwork.
Sure. Okay. Well, sounds good.
Yeah. Fun. Yeah. And I'm always, always ask questions and then email me again if I don't answer.
Just keep barraging you with messages.
Yeah.